I am Terry Griffith. I'm here with my co-host, Debo Getty, and we're Bark Radio.
Hey, Bark Radio listeners. We got some good stuff on the agenda today. Terry, what's at the top of our list?
Well, top of the list isn't good, but it is important information.
Okay, important is good.
And I read an article on a train coming back from New York on something I would never have guessed could happen. And there's a number of cases being reported where dogs are getting their tongue caught in a shredder.
Are you kidding me?
No.
A paper shredder.
Paper shredder, like you would have in your home office or whatever. And if people don't have paper shredders, most of them can be set to a standby mode, so you just, as soon as you feed something in, it starts shredding.
Including a dog tongue.
Including a dog's tongue. In the particular article, it was a Rhodesian Ridgeback that had done it, and as it panicked, it actually bit through its own tongue to get away. But the number of cases is still relatively small, but I just would never have thought of a dog doing that.
No.
I can't imagine why they would lick that.
And then Vicky said, well, probably one of the kids went by and touched it with their
peanut butter
sandwich fingers. Yes. Yeah, I can't, you know, dogs will find more ways to get themselves physically hurt than we can even imagine, and it's just another warning to our listeners.
Well, yeah, the simple solution is to leave it in the off position.
Yep.
Turn it on when you need it. But yep. I would...
Who would have thought? You know, and we've both got some dogs in our houses who lick a lot.
Yeah.
But that?
Yeah, I've never seen him paying attention to it.
So beware, guys. You know, put those shredders in the off position, and you won't have to worry about Fido shredding his poor tongue.
I know.
Ow!
I know. I can't even imagine. That's just, oh, it gives me the willies.
Mm-hmm.
That poor dog.
Me too. Oh, poor thing. Oh, okay. So better stuff after that?
No.
Jeez, oh, Terry.
So I think everybody by now has probably heard about the oil spill in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually an interesting piece to that. And there's a San Francisco nonprofit who's making these mats out of hair, dog hair, human hair, to help soak up the oil.
Seriously?
Yep. Name of the company is Matter of Trust. And they're...
Wow.
They had some cool pictures. The mats are reusable as far as they can be. You soak it up, you wring them out... and you can reuse them up to about 100 times before they're too saturated to do anything with.
So these hair-filled things soak up the oil.
Looks like what they do is they kind of compress them
mm-hmm.
into some sort of form. They may
mm-hmm.
put some sort of material in there to hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they're basically making a hair sponge.
Wow.
And I thought that was very cool. And I've seen, since I read the article, I've seen on Twitter that they actually have some collection points, and they're encouraging groomers and barbershops to collect the hair and send it to them so they can make these mats to clean up this oil spill.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk?
Not me. I had no idea you could do
There's
that.
There's finally a use for our dog's hair that seems to be everywhere in my house.
Exactly. Sparky's going to make a mat all by himself.
Yeah.
He's a shedder.
Try my five labs.
Exactly.
Been wanting to make pillows for years out of dog hair. Now there is a use.
There is a use.
That is very, very cool. So we'll have to find that that link to send our listeners to. So
I've got it in my email. I just
excellent.
Can't remember it right now. But
cool, man. I really like that.
That's a neat
innovative.
Idea. Yeah,
yep,
it is
yep,
innovative.
Yep.
So this is a good one.
Okay, about
right.
time.
So this is in Waukesha County, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a partnership that's taken place between a group called Pro Healthcare and the Humane Animal Welfare Society there
in Wisconsin.
And they're having the patients that are recovering from heart surgery work at the shelter and walking the dogs.
Part of their therapy.
Part of the therapy. They get to play with the dogs. They're walking them. They're spending time with them. It's a great idea. It's a phenomenal idea.
One more way that human-canine connection shows how special it is.
Yeah.
Because that's got to just decrease their recuperation time. If you've had heart surgery or whatever, just to be able to have that relationship, even with a dog who's not your own.
Yeah.
But the exercise, but then the compassion that dogs have, you know, that unconditional love, you know, sit down during the walk, you know, and just have some little loving from the dog. How fabulous is that?
I think it's neat. I'd love to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised we haven't, because frankly, it costs nothing to implement.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's shelter dogs being therapy dogs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just huge. I love that they're doing that. And I am curious, too, now that you've mentioned it. You know, why isn't it being done elsewhere? Maybe it is. We just haven't heard about it.
Well, that, it could be. It could be. It's just kind of under the covers. But I think that it needs to be known. People need to realize this is a possibility because it's gonna. It's again. It's free. You don't. It's physical therapy without a cost.
Right, and yeah. Such a great one outdoors. Walking is the best exercise you can get.
Yeah.
And then you throw a dog into the picture. It's like woohoo! Now you know. Just think about other people recuperating from surgeries, from all sorts of things. Wow. What a cool partnership between the rehab places and shelters.
Yeah. I think it's neat.
That's
I love
a fabulous idea. Yeah. And I wonder if every now and again one of those dogs might get adopted by someone who walks them.
You got to believe there's an attachment that takes place there. I don't know. I didn't say that wasn't the focus of the article,
but know.
I bet there's a few at least.
Yeah, that's just really cool. Good one, Terry.
So this was, and the next one is one I had not even considered, but it's called canine thyroid disorder. And I didn't realize that canines had thyroid problems typically. I guess I never thought about it.
I mean, I've seen it, read it in passing, but really had never honed in on it.
This particular study was talking about the side effects of it, which are fear, aggression, those types of responses if you have a thyroid problem, if the dog has a thyroid problem. And the article was largely around the fact that how many millions of dogs end up in shelters or euthanized because they have a thyroid problem, which is treatable because of the behavior they're exhibiting. And nobody's associating these two things until this recent study.
That, I have never heard that correlation before between thyroid issues and behavior issues. And yeah, I mean, we all know that more dogs lose their lives every year because of behavior issues than anything else. And oh my goodness, this is a piece of that?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
And think of the super shy dogs, because they're also talking about anxiety being part of that. So the dogs that are cowering in the corner, is this just a thyroid problem? And it seems like an easy blood test to find out.
Is that what it is? Is it a blood test to determine?
It might be saliva now, but I thought they had to draw blood. But even that, I mean, it's a cost, and so the shelters aren't going to typically do that. But it would be an interesting study, again, to see, you know, what if 80% of the dog problems are just they have a thyroid issue?
Wow. And so you said this was a study, or this was...
This is just an article talking about the start,
okay,
about the study,
mm-hmm,
and it's through the... veterinary groups, one of the big groups that did the studies around it.
Jeez, I think I'm going to have to Google this. This sounds really interesting.
I have the lady that's in the article is Jean Dodds, but doesn't say the study's name. I have to do some research on that. Well, we'll look for our listeners and see if we can find it. But I found the article very interesting.
I never in my life would have associated those two things.
Yeah.
And you know, just going into people's homes as a trainer, you hear me say this all the time, their rescue dogs especially, the number of times I walk in and maybe the owner thinks that the dog's aggressive and it's obviously fear or anxiety. And so I know the numbers are big.
Yeah.
I mean, just in my little personal study, I can see that. And some of them seem to be even overwhelming. And oh my goodness, what if that was treatable? Because there's a physical disease behind it. So, treatment, does it talk in there at all about treatment for, is it hyperthyroidism?
Hyperthyroidism. No, it doesn't talk about treatment. It talks about signs. Some of them are signs that most computer world again.
Yeah.
The most people, owners, wouldn't probably recognize, but eye disorders is one. So, you might think if they're going prematurely blind or cataracts or something like that, it could be caused by thyroid, gastrointestinal problems, so if they're very, you know, gassy, although Sparky's gassy all the time, but or diarrhea or something along those lines, skin diseases.
Whoa.
So that
and there are so many itchy dogs floating around.
Exactly.
And it's always assumed it's allergies.
Allergies or mange.
Right.
And it may not be.
Wow.
But some of the other things are reproductive disorders, cardiac anomalies, neuromuscular problems, and impaired metabolic functions. But those are things you have to have tests for to see what's going on. Your vet should test for some of that during normal physical, yearly physical. But what is interesting here is that the symptoms of the thyroid problem typically don't show up, according to this article, until at least 70% or more of the thyroid is damaged. Holy. So I'm wondering how correctable it is at that point.
Right.
I mean, that's significant. If you got 30% function,
right,
can you pull it back? I don't know.
Oh, man. So if the symptoms don't present before that, that's a challenge. And I wonder if it's something, like you said, it, with some sort of test that maybe could become standard, you know, in yearly exams.
Yeah, here it says that once identified, it's easily maintained with thyroxine. Yes, that's it. Hormone replacement. So it's similar to humans.
Wow. Okay, yeah, this is a really interesting
subject. I'll see if we can find the whole article. Yeah. I think it'd be really neat. You know, it's just, I'd never thought about it.
And just something more for us to stuff in our brains and remember if we see stuff going on with our dogs. It's something to ask our vets about.
Yeah.
How do you test for hyperthyroidism?
Yeah.
And can you do it with my dog, just in case? Wow. Good job, Terry. Good
so
one.
So that was pretty interesting one. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, man. All right.
We got one last thing.
Okay.
And that is just a simple thing that I was reading. Again, same magazine, was on canine diabetes. And while they're you know, standard treatment, same as humans, mm-hmm. insulin, but they're talking about different herbs that help to supplement that, might reduce the insulin intake. Mm-hmm. And the herbs that they recommended were aloe vera, cinnamon, fenugreek seeds, which I don't know what that is, and ginseng.
Hmm.
It was a very short article, so it was really talking about the fact that you should supplement, but it didn't say how much or any details.
So you need an herbalist.
You need an herbalist or somebody that really understands it. But I thought it was neat that they were promoting that rather than just giving the insulin shots.
Absolutely. Anything that's natural, I mean, that's our preference.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be drugging your dog up unless it's absolutely necessary. So think holistic, guys.
Yeah.
It's really important. All right.
That's it.
Out of here.
Bye.